Good morning. Senate Judiciary Committee meeting is called back to order after recess. We recessed on Friday afternoon to the call of the chair. Today is Monday, May 16th, 2022. The time I have is 9:02 a.m. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Keel, Senator Meyer, Senator Hughes, and myself as chair, Senator Holland. Senator Schauer will not be joining us today. We do have a quorum to conduct business, though. Thank you to Nancy, our recording secretary, and Emma, our moderator for today. And as a reminder, if you have your cell phones on you, please silence your cell phones. Sorry about that. At this time, I'm going to bring House Bill 325 before the committee. Ms. Keeneman, if you'd come up to the presenter's table. This is the first hearing on House Bill 325, and it's relating to domestic violence. Thank you for joining us this morning. And would you like to offer the sponsor statement for Representative Rasmussen and any bill overview?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. For the record, my name is Crystal Keeneman, staff to Representative Rasmussen, and she does send her regards for not being here as she is doing other state business at this moment, given the short hours of session. Before you today is House Bill 325, which updates the definition of domestic violence. Under the current law, sending explicit images or videos is classified as harassment in the second degree. However, it is not considered an act of domestic violence or a crime involving domestic violence. What House Bill 325 does is updates those statutes by incorporating image-based sexual abuse to the definition. It's a short bill. I do have Casey Schroeder as well as John Skidmore here for technical questions, but that, Mr. Chairman, is the short and sweet of it.
Thank you, Ms. Keeneman. I appreciate that. I was wrong when I was talking earlier. I thought that it changed four characters in statute. It changes actually five. One, two, three, four, five characters. Six if you count the space. But are there any questions for the sponsor staff? Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the top of the bill, the portion we're not changing the definition of domestic violence, it says that it's by a household member against another household member. So how does this apply if we talk about something that gets sent after a breakup, after a divorce, or if somebody never lived together, so they're not technically household members anymore or might not have ever been?
Senator Meyer, through the chair, I would like to bring up John Skidmore. I believe he can answer that definition much better than that.
Mr. Skidmore, if you care to take the presenter's table. Place yourself on the record and offer any insight on the question.
Good morning, members of Senate Judiciary. For the record, my name is John Skidmore. I'm the Deputy Attorney General for the Criminal Division. And through the chair, Senator Meyer, the answer to your question is that a household member is defined in statute. It's actually Alaska Statute 1866-990. It is actually subsection 5, and household member means an adult or minor who are current or former spouses, adults or minors who live together or who have lived together, adults or minors who are dating or have dated, and adults or minors who are engaged in or have engaged in a sexual relationship, and then adults or minors that are related within the fourth degree of consanguinity. Adults or minors who are related or formally related by marriage, and persons who have a child of the relationship, and then last but not least, minor children of a person in a relationship that is described above. So more expressly to answer your question, would former spouses or would former boyfriend or girlfriend be qualified? The answer is yes.
Okay, thank you.
The term household apparently doesn't necessarily have to do with a house. It's like
as it's defined in law, household member is far more broad than simply the residence. That's correct.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Skidmore. Senator Hughes.
Just so I understand this correctly, and I don't have my statute book with me, but the person, the sharing of the photos can be texting them as well as posting them online. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, the statute refers to publishing or distribution of the images. And so publishing or distribution can occur online, or it could occur in the old-fashioned print copy.
Now, I'm trying to remember what we did, but I remember having a conversation that if a person is tagged, so their name is associated with a photo, the penalty is more severe, or we discussed doing that, because there's one thing to have an image that is posted online if you don't know who it is, but when the person is tagged, it is much more abusive. Did we do something along those lines, or was that just a discussion?
Mr. Skidmore?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I recall the discussion as well. I don't believe it was in relation to this particular statute. I would have to go back and look at some of the other sex offenses to see if there was something associated with them. And I don't recall whether or not that conversation we had, I believe we had it here in this room, I don't recall if that conversation resulted in an enhanced penalty for any crime. I would have to confirm.
Can we take an Addies?
A brief Addies. Thank you. Senate Judiciary is back on the record. Senator Hughes.
Yeah, so for the public during Addies, sometimes we're trying to remember conversations, and there is a provision that wouldn't relate to this in another bill that's in Senate Finance, so it is something we might want to address at some time. I don't want to slow this bill down in that we're approaching a deadline, but it might be something to address in the future. I have one more question, and I don't know, Mr. Skidmore, if you could respond to it, or maybe the sponsor staff, but there's an article from a National Conference of State Legislatures, and it's got a color-coded map, and it shows Alaska as having a ban on revenge porn. So I was just wondering, I thought we're taking care of that today, so do we have some other law in the books that would NCSL would have considered a ban on revenge porn?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I'm not familiar with the particular article you're referring to. I would, however, tell you that the harassment that is in front of you all is currently in state statute. So we do have a penalty for that type of conduct. What today's bill is addressing is not whether or not it's illegal, but whether or not it is considered a crime of domestic violence. That's the change that's being made through this bill. So it's already a crime. But should that crime be considered a crime of domestic violence? That's the question that this bill addresses.
Okay, great. Thanks. That clarifies it.
All right. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You sort of answered another question when you talk about the household member, but is there a time limit on whether when distribution would be considered domestic violence or not? I would think, you know, you break up and a week later somebody sends out a picture that would count. But, you know, 5 years later, I mean, some people can be pretty vindictive later on.
Through the chair to Senator Myers, there is not a time limit on when something is considered to be domestic violence. It looks at the nature of the relationship and it looks at the type of crime that's been committed. But there is not a time frame that is associated with that.
Okay. And then I got one other question.
All right. Senator Myers.
Thank you. How do we deal with it if the perpetrator is under 18? This seems to be something, you know, relatively popular among high school kids, that, you know, sexting and stuff. So let's say you got two 16-year-olds involved here and somebody sends out a picture. How does that get affected in law?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, I don't know if I can say that it's common amongst high schoolers, but I certainly agree with you that I hear stories along those lines. The answer to your question is that the laws in Alaska set a difference between folks that are prosecuted in adult court, which is open to the public, versus those individuals that are prosecuted in the juvenile justice system. And those records tend to be confidential unless they are of a felony level crime against another person where someone's been injured And in those circumstances, then some of those records can become public later. But in this instance, this is not a crime that would qualify for being public. In terms of how it's actually handled, the Division of Juvenile Justice and the goals of that system versus the adult system are very different. For example, in the juvenile justice system, the question that is posed is, what is in the best interest of the minor? And when I say the minor, I mean the minor that's the offender. What is in their best interest to try and help them become a better person? In the adult system, it's very different. There are five sentencing goals. One is isolation, one is community condemnation, one is rehabilitation, one is general deterrence, and one is specific deterrence. Those are found both in the Constitution and in state statute. So you can tell there's a very different focus in terms of how you address the individuals that have engaged in that conduct. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Senator Myers. Senator Hughes.
I have another question, and it is more general, so whether it's domestic violence or not. Do we have anything in our law that would allow someone who's a victim of this to receive damages? I'm reading the article. Victims say they have lost jobs when approached in stores by strangers who recognize their photos, watch close family, close friendships and family relationships dissolve. Some have changed their names or altered their appearance. So impact can be quite severe. I'm just wondering if anything in our law would prevent a person from receiving damages if they're a victim from this.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I don't think there's anything in the law that would prevent a victim from receiving damages, but the two mechanisms by which that might occur, first, in a criminal case, a victim could request restitution. The type of damages that you reference in that article, I'm not sure if those would fall within the scope of our restitution statute. That's a question I haven't encountered before, so I would need to think about that and look at that more carefully. But the second mechanism would be in a typical civil case. A victim could certainly bring what's called a tort. That's a term in law that means that they've been injured or harmed by another party, and it's seeking civil damages. I don't practice in civil law, so I don't want anyone to take what I'm saying as there's this easy path. But that would be the method by which I would be recommending to someone that they look at that, but they would need to discuss that with a civil lawyer about the options.
Thank you.
Senator Q.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this may be a question for the sponsor, whoever would like to take it. It's maybe just sort of a broader approach question on the bill. We have for domestic violence lots of other consequences, restraining orders and other rights that a domestic violence perpetrator loses, and all very appropriately. It's a serious problem. When I look at the other things in our domestic violence statute now, they seem to me all to be physical harm or an immediate proximity thing, right? Breaking into the house, being on the property when you've been told not to. This is, I think, different in that respect, right? This is not a physical harm. This is not physical closeness and an immediate risk of getting injured. So it looks to me like a departure from how we've thought about domestic violence in the past. Can you talk about why this is the right approach and necessary to treat this one the same as those other things?
Thank you, Senator Keel. Again, for the record, Crystal Keenum and staff to Representative Rasmussen. Within the domestic violence statute, there is reference to other pieces within the harassment in the second degree, which are not physical threats, obscene phone calls, other things that can happen from a distance versus that immediate threat. One of the things that we have heard from the both the Network on Domestic Violence as well as some of the other victims advocate groups is that abuse comes in many different forms, and while it may seem like a departure from violence, it can be very traumatic to the victims. It is something that can be damaging. They may not wish to leave their house. As Senator Hughes had mentioned in the article, they're recognized out in public. There are other things that can happen, taunts from others who may see the photos. And so the act of sending the photos or publishing them can result in violence from others or lead them to be in an unsafe environment. And so that's why we brought this forward, right? There are many different aspects to how somebody can be victimized. And it's in all forms, whether it's physical violence, emotional abuse, sending of photos, these types of things. It's really hard for the victims. And so to give them some peace, to get a restraining order, because it may not be necessarily them. It may be their children who are affected by this as well. And it was important to the sponsor as well as the victim community to include this in the domestic violence statutes in order to trigger the restraining order in order to help prevent any physical violence that may ensue as a result of these.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. I appreciate that. That's an excellent discussion. I don't have the network's letter up, but I did read the same article that Senator Hughes referenced, and I appreciate that. It sounds like in addition to the things you listed, the other commonality might be the elements of isolating the victim and of using this to control the victim. Can you just speak generally about how those play in with the broader nature of domestic violence?
Sure. Senator Keel.
If I may, Senator Keel, John Skidmore
for
the record. When you mention control, the reason I speak up is part of my role as the Deputy Attorney General is I also happen to sit on the Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And having prosecuted domestic violence for the last 25 years, the things that we're taught is that domestic violence is really about a cycle of control and manipulation. And it's not simply about the physical violence. It's about all of the other ways in which a perpetrator is trying to control and manipulate that person that they were in some sort of relationship for some period of time. And it goes in cycles. So you'll see that it'll build up to something and then there'll be a reconciliation. Sometimes it comes back down again, but it seems to cycle back around, which kind of relates back to a concept that Senator Myers was talking about earlier. Is there a time frame? And unfortunately, what we found is that there really isn't a time frame. People can become so focused on an individual that they'll just continue to cycle up and cycle up and cycle up. And in this particular case, it's really that method, that attempt by the offender to continue to hurt and to harm the victim because the victim won't be with them anymore. It's about wanting to say, you are mine and only mine. And if you're not with me, I will exercise the greatest amount of pain that I can on you, and this is another way to do that. It may not be physical pain, I think you're accurate in that, but it's psychological, it's emotional, and all of that critically plays a role in domestic violence.
Thank you, Mr. Skidmore. I'll just add, I think it's almost a element of technology where this has come up in recent years. Because I looked at the rest of Alaska Statute 1161.120, what we're adding, revenge porn too. One of the items is making repeated telephone calls at extremely inconvenient hours. I think that is a magnitude less than what we're talking about adding to it. And I think it's totally appropriate to add, to make the changes that are being proposed with Alaska Statute. I think it's just been overlooked because technology is just made this next leap. We need to address it at this time. All right, Senator Hughes.
I just want to add, you know, typically we think of the physical violence, bruises, broken bones, et cetera, but actually the psychological and emotional abuse can result in physical impacts. People will get physically sick. It's pretty incredible how the whole body works and the mental state can impact the person's physical health. So I just want to point that out. So there is a little bit of a connection there. The other question that I had, and I know we're dealing with the, and we're not talking about the moment the photos were taken. We're talking about the publication and distribution. Is in some of these cases, the person, the victim has consented to the photos at the time. They didn't know they were going to be used later in the way they were. Is there an increased penalty if the photos were taken without consent and then distributed or published?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I believe that there are other crimes that would actually be applicable in those circumstances, and there are higher penalties associated with those. So, yes.
Good. Thanks.
All right. Are there any other questions from the committee for the sponsor or the Department of Law? I even see we have Alaska Courts in the back. So with no further questions, I'm going to open up for a public testimony at this time. Thank you, Mr. Skidmore. Thank you, Ms. Kieneman. All right, so we're now open for a public testimony on House Bill 325. Does anyone in the room wish to offer a public testimony on House Bill 325? Seeing none, I'll look online real quick, and I don't see anyone online wishing to offer public testimony. So at this time, we'll close public testimony on 325. Public testimony is now closed. And is there any further discussion on 325? And are there any amendments for House Bill 325? Seeing no amendments, no further discussion. Ms. Kieneman, do you have any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All I want to say is that for victims, thank you for taking action on this. As Senator Hughes mentioned, the physical toll that abuse can take on a person, it's rough. Mm-hmm. And so anything we can do to help them, greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Kieneman. And at this time, with no further discussion, no amendments being offered, I will look to Senator Hughes for the will of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the Senate committee substitute for HB at ease. Is this a... All right, we'll
Senate
try.
Judiciary is back on the record. Senator Hughes, thanks for catching that up. Look to you for the correct will of the committee.
Yeah, I'll try again, Mr. Chair. I move that House Bill 325, Work Order 32-LS1526-A, be reported from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
All right, without objection, House Bill 325 has been reported from the Senate Judiciary Committee with individual recommendations and attach fiscal notes. If committee members would please stay behind after we gavel out to sign the paperwork. Is there any other business before this committee? Seeing none, our next scheduled meeting is today, Monday, May 16th at 1:30 p.m. That meeting will be canceled if there is no business for us to conduct. And I'm not quite sure if we will be having another committee meeting before the end of the session. Just want to say I appreciate the expert testimony, the staff work I've witnessed for the last 2 years or so, and the committee members' patience. And with that, if there's nothing else before the committee, I'll be gaveling out. We are adjourned at 9:26 a.m.